Welcome to Profiling Criminal Minds. I'm Dan.
Dr. Redmond.
And, hoo boy, are we well into the Reed stuff now? Oh my god, I'm so stupid. Why didn't I say, well, we are well into the Reeds? But that would have been that would have been what a smart person does. And, you know, we all see the kind of stuff I'm responsible for here.
Okay.
Well and truly into the Reeds. Okay, but before we get started on these three episodes, there's something that came up last week that we were so distracted talking about Reed and his mother and how interesting that that episode was in defining our... I mean, it's the point at which it stops being meta-Reed and it starts being text, right?
Yeah.
And that episode is, like, the thing that has validated our feelings about Reed more than any other. So obviously we got very excited to talk about it in the otherwise mediocre episode, there are sinkholes and a guy wants to praise Satan by throwing people into them. Very dumb episode. But what I'll say here, right, is there's something that we miss talking about that I really wanted to talk about, but we ran out of time. So we're just going to quickly address it here, which is at the very start of that episode, we see a bunch of people about to dissect their first cadaver as part of the anatomy course in their medical school. And we get this insane moment where the doctor in charge of their education says that you don't have to be squeamish or worried or think of this as a person. Bodies are just things that exist to help us become doctors. And that it's like a body is just, you know, a brief place that a person hangs out for a while, but generally it's just meat. And I'm like, wow, you're talking like a serial killer. Like, there's no other way to describe that. Because, and I can't stress this enough, and, you know, you're a doctor of religion. Tell me if I'm crazy here, but isn't respecting the dead the first step to developing religion?
Like, and have you ever watched NCIS, anybody? That's how you treat a dead body.
Yes, with respect. I mean, I'll say this. I always found it creepy the way Catherine from News Radio would call corpses sweetie and talk to them in those episodes. It was a little unnerving. There's something like, I feel like she has emotional issues.
CSI Miami.
No, CS Miami. Sorry, CSI Miami. Whoops, that was embarrassing.
News Radio?
I know. Well, no, but she was from News Radio. That's Catherine from News Radio.
Yeah, she was from News Radio.
Yeah, Catherine from News Radio. I don't remember what her character name was on CSI Miami. I don't remember her character name on CSI Miami, which is why I think of her as Catherine from News Radio. I mean, I could call her Candy Alexander. I know the actress's name.
Yeah.
But the point is, Catherine from News Radio is what I'll think of her first, invariably. But anyway, the point I was getting at was, that was always a little creepy, but it demonstrates what is important to all medicine, which is respect for people and wanting to help people. And that respect doesn't end the moment they die, you
exactly.
know? And like, I mean, just a little behind the scenes stuff here. I wrote on a doctor TV show, right? I wrote, episode of a doctor mm-hmm. TV show and integral. And there were real doctors working on it. And what got explained to me, you know, for the scene when they're all talking about their corpses is, despite the fact that these are just corpses for them to examine and learn how to dissect and figure out how the human body works, it is integral to think of them as the people they were and respect the fact that the body was donated to science means that they're going to be able to help more people in the future, right?
Yep.
And how, like, how big a deal it is to donate body for this kind of dissection when you die. And so for this woman in this episode to just say, that's just meat, it's kind of horrible.
Oh, it was. I just looked at it.
You recoil, right?
Can you imagine?
That being your doctor?
David, what's his, you know, from Man from U.N.C.L.E. Who's the
doctor? Oh, yeah, Ducky, yeah.
Ducky, right? Yeah. Can you imagine
him
Ducky
acting like that? I know!
Or if he had walked in when those two were fooling around with the body?
I know, the dressing down he would have given them. I know,
oh,
right there.
Oh my God, he would have just
given them a whole speech about how you have to respect the dead.
I'm just going, I don't think so. Yeah, I was really upset by that, but it's true. We got sidetracked.
We got sidetracked. But yeah, it's a very shocking, if anything is ever going to sidetrack us, it's Reed. But it was a very shocking thing to hear and very offensive to me.
And?
Please.
And from my perspective, yeah, it tells us something about criminal minds. As we're writing our criminal minds book, this is
that,
one
that
thing.
That moment is going to be worth coming back to.
It's all just talking. There has to be a whole chapter on what is the ethics of criminal minds, and I'll find some phrase from the episode from one of these episodes.
Yeah, but it's like the one about the ethics is that body is just meat. That's a pretty good chapter title for that.
Yeah, that body is just meat.
Or however she said it. Well, it's funny because it's like
on
that moment. I know. But what's funny is, right, and I want to stress this enough. I can't stress this enough, sorry, is that it's like even animals have respect for the dead. And this is a fun fact that not a lot of people know, but it's like generally, people who study them say that there's a good chance that although we can't possibly imagine what it's like for them, there's a good chance that elephants have a religion.
Yeah, I know. It's weird.
Because they have both a place that they traditionally go to die.
Yeah.
And when young elephants are killed by predators, which is pretty much the only way a young elephant can die, because they tend to stay pretty close to the herd, and elephants have no predators, so they just generally all die of old age, or from poachers, obviously. But it's like when a young elephant, and they have now video footage of this, because it's just been anecdotal until like 20 years ago, but they found a calf that had been mauled by tigers. Oh, no, sorry, lions. And they witnessed a funeral. Like,
they had mourning.
Yeah, they had mourning. Yeah. A giant procession of elephants got in a line, and each one walked up and in sequence spent some time with the, like, mourning the body, and then moved on and let the next elephant have their turn. And it can only be described as an elephant funeral.
Yeah.
So we know they have funerals. We know they have burial sites, and so there's a good chance elephants have some kind of a religion that we don't understand. But it's like, to watch this woman say bodies are just meat and know that even elephants respect the dead is kind of shocking.
Well, even other groups mourn. There are
absolutely
other animals.
There are signs that other animals do, too. It's just elephants are the ones that we have the best evidence of. And that's why I think it's worth bringing up. So, just terrifying ethical messages
that come out of this show. Just wait till we discuss Spencer.
Oh, well, yeah. Let's go for it.
Remember, I have to talk about one thing. Spencer has a commentary on it.
Yes, and we're going to get there, and you're going to bring up InfoWars when we're talking about the commentary. Don't worry, I won't let you forget. But anyway, hit me with the synopsis, please.
Spencer.
Episode 12-13.
When Reed is arrested and charged with drug possession by Mexican authorities, the BAU works with international response team members Clara Seeger and Matt Simmons to prove his innocence in the death of a Mexican-American doctor.
Okay. So first things first, this guy says he's worked with the international response team before, and I'm like, did we see him in one episode? Because I didn't remember him.
No, I don't think he was in. No.
Yeah, because did we do a Mexico episode?
No, that's second season.
That's next season. Okay, there we go.
Okay.
And, it'd be neat if this actor was in it, though.
But because he was in the border, I don't know if this actor is in it. But if he's on the border, I mean, yes. There isn't a real international response team, but in the fictional world of criminal minds,
it makes perfect sense that this guy would have. Yeah.
Or,
totally.
Or to quote Erica Messer, in the criminal minds family. Greg, you should have heard that commentary.
I will eventually.
Lord.
If we do write that book, you know, I'm going to have to listen to all of the commentaries at some point.
Oh God.
Oh, but anyway, let's get to it.
Yeah. So,
All right.
I mean, it opens up with a chase scene.
Yep. Really yeah. baffled me the first, and you can read my review if you want proof of this. I was baffled by the chase. I'm like, this is so unlike Criminal Minds.
Well,
it felt so off brand for them. It was action packed.
Kirsten Van Ness does make the point that, well, this isn't really Criminal Minds, you know. So there were no actors. It was just all the cars.
Well, no, but it's true. Like, that's just traditionally not how a show starts. And then it turns out it's Reed, and I assumed, logically, my first assumption was he was undercover for some reason. But no, like, he's literally just down in Mexico trying to get drugs for his mother, and things go horribly awry. And so the episode starts off, and then it just motors from there. And there is no murder this week. Well, other than, you know,
the doctor.
But I'm just saying, there's no, like, extra, there's no Sirico this week. It is literally just an episode about Reed's predicament and them dealing with it. And it's, I mean, it's very off-brand for the show, and it's kind of offensive in its treatment of Mexico. But at least it's evidence of them trying something different every now and then.
Yes. Well, yes, I mean, heaven forbid, or as you would say, heaven forfend that they should treat foreigners with any kind of respect.
Oh no, God, no, they can't risk respecting foreigners on this show.
And I'm going
that way lies madness.
You know, and the other thing I was thinking about that part of it, I'm going, you know, that Mexican police chief let them take those guys way too
easily.
Quickly.
Yeah.
Like I think it was his comment of working with the IRT before was probably a veiled, yeah, you guys are assholes.
We know how you are. I know
we know
you
how you
are.
And if you want to, and then when they found out the doctor was an American, they just, you know.
Yeah, they just swoop in and they're like, great, now we got an excuse to hijack this guy and ruin this guy's case. Well, just, I think what bothered me most about the episode is.
Well, because Reed didn't do it.
Well, yeah, I know, because they're 100% sure Reed didn't do it, and that's all they say for the whole.
He would never do something like that.
Which I know, right?
Oh, frig! I'm sitting there listening to this episode.
He 100% would do drugs. He has done drugs. Like, I kind of feel sorry that they screwed James Vanderbeek out of a paycheck by not actually showing him or putting his voice in the flashback.
Yeah.
Like, oh, come on, you could have given him a paycheck, guys. I'm sure it wouldn't have been a lot. I'm sure he would have been reasonable about it. And that just would have been nice. But yes, so the point is that the casually bigoted treatment, right, of the... I mean, we're used to it with their treatment of local cops wherever they go. But in this episode, I was especially annoyed because, A, you've got this moment where... the rules are different down here when he's getting around. I'm like, no, they're not. It's illegal to kill people in Mexico, and people have rights, and the suspects have rights in Mexico. Like, the rules
just
aren't
can't
actually...
call.
Yeah. Well, no, but and the one of the funny parts is this is something that they don't tell you because people have been brainwashed by television, but you know what? In America, people aren't entitled to a phone call either. That's
we know
just something
Canada
from television.
Yeah.
No, you're not. Like, if you behave well and ask nicely, they might give you a phone call, but you're not entitled to one phone call. That's just a fictional device from television. If the cops don't want to give you a phone call, they don't have to give you a phone call. If they ask you to contact a legal representative, they legally have to do that, but they don't have to let you call, and they sure as hell don't have to give you access to a phone.
They don't have, yeah, they have to give you a Miranda warning.
Yep, they have to. Oh, and in the Miranda warning, there sure as hell isn't anything about you get one phone call. Oh,
yeah.
No, it's you have the right to not say anything to them, and you have the right to be provided with an attorney.
Yeah.
If you can't afford one, they will provide one for you. I mean, there's a whole thing about whether or not they actually provide you the money for attorney that we get into some other time. Not really relevant to this conversation.
It's not relevant to this episode.
No, absolutely. But, like, that moment where they're like, oh, no, like, he's not getting his phone call. Yeah, you don't necessarily get a phone call in America either, people.
Yeah,
that's
but these
just
people,
something from television.
Yes, but these people live in TV land.
That's true.
Right?
The people
their
who make
world
this
is
show,
TV land.
only know from TV.
They get their they do their research from InfoWars.
Okay. I cannot wait to find out what this InfoWars reference. Okay, well, we'll get there in a second.
We'll get there.
Oh, no, but, yes, it's about the conspiracy to murder doctors who are flying. I just realized what it is in the episode. That truly stupid scene in the episode.
Yeah, well, maybe she was hiding, you know, from because she was afraid she would be killed by
the pharmaceutical industry.
Oh, my God.
I know, that blew my mind when I heard it in this episode. Yeah. But now I know what you're talking about.
But, you know, Erica Messer in the commentary goes, and you know that's real. We did research, and it was really stunning what we found out. And do you know that that's real?
Oh my God, Erica!
No, it really started from this woman who runs something called Health Nut News.
Yeah, of course.
Right, and there was a guy who committed suicide, right? Well, by the name of Eric Bradstreet.
Right.
Right. And I mean, he was one of these things that one of these people, he's a, you don't get vaccinated because it causes autism.
Autism. Right. Okay.
And he's an evangelist, and he would push things like GCMAF.
What's that?
Oh, it's one of these remedies. You take it from human blood. I won't explain it all.
Okay.
But they advertise it as a cure for like cancer and autism.
Yeah.
And he killed himself after his Georgia clinic. He was in Georgia, of course.
Of course.
Was raided by the federal agents looking for the GCMAF.
Ah, and so ridiculous. What do you call it? Ridiculous Alex Jones types say that it was a hit by the government who was trying to cover up that he's cured cancer.
Well, this woman puts it on her Health Nut News.
Of course.
Right? And she claims over 60 doctors of holistic medicine. And so, of course, needless to say, Natural News, InfoWars, and the rest of it, pick it up and pretend.
You know, and the thing is, if you can go and you can look at my review, right?
Yeah.
I actually, when they said that on the episode, and by the way, it's shocking that they did quote unquote research on this. And I'm like, have you people not heard of Snopes.com? Because it took me 3 minutes on Snopes.com to find out where this story came from, why it's a crazy lie. Why the numbers in no way add up to what people are saying. But it's like, so you're saying they listen to InfoWars?
I don't know. Like they said, they did research and they were shocked by the research they found. Do you know? And she said, and it's true that there are these 60 doctors that have died
mysteriously.
Well, it turns out that they're not 60 doctors in the United States to begin with.
They're
all these weird doctors. And she goes back, like, the woman that started all of this stuff, right?
Yeah.
And she was, you know, and then she goes off into her, and what does that have to do with the price of chi in China? crap that all these guys do, right?
Of course.
Some of these people go, they call it a bait and switch, right?
Yeah, naturally.
But I just call it, yeah. That used to be a response I used to make as a when I was a lot younger and I don't know, my mother used it, you know, it was just something that we did. I don't know where it came from exactly, but I mean, it came from the British Empire.
Of course.
Right. But it deals with that. And I'm just going, well over 60, mostly holistic. Well, none of it was true. But of course, they did their research.
I know. I went to Snopes and I found out that, yeah, not one of these things backs up. It's like people who committed suicide, people who got murdered by their spouses, people who died in car accidents. Like, every time a holistic doctor died, they decided it was suspicious. You know what? Holistic doctors die at the same rate as everybody else.
And all of these doctors that she lists were not all holistic doctors.
Yes.
You know, they weren't even holistic doctors. Like, it was the bizarrest thing when I listened to the commentary. I mean, it was bad enough when I heard it in the episode. Oh, that's so stupid. Because at least in the episode, Well, you know, I mean, there is this, you know, it's written as if there's a suspicion. But yeah. In the commentary, she says, it's true. They went and did research. And I'm going, oh, my good God. This explains so much. Oh, Kristen. So this is, yeah.
We still love you, Kirsten. But, oh, my God. Kristen.
Well, her and Erica.
Erica, yeah. We still love one of you.
Yeah, but, oh my God. Right? And you should have heard her at the end. I'm just going to do it right now. At the end, right, yeah. Where it should be just before Mark Gordon.
Yeah.
And she says, yeah, and this is where next year I'm going to be.
Oh.
With your Erica Messer Productions.
Oh.
Holy shit. What a, you know, yes, we will always like Kirsten because, you know,
she's such a positive person.
Yes.
She loves the work so much. She loves the show so much. She's out there, like, doing wonderful stuff with charities and for people every day. But, oh my God, is she so completely out of her depth writing about this stuff?
Yeah.
Well, and that's the only way to describe it. She's completely out of her depth. She just doesn't know what she's talking about.
Well, particularly here. Well, you'll listen to it because she does one other commentary, the first episode that she and Erica wrote together.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, and just, you know... And I love her clothes and I love everything. and she buys things like she has created Penelope Garcia as a real person.
As a real person. 100%.
And she buys things for Penelope and she knows what Penelope is going to do and say. And she said at one point in this commentary, you know, she says, sometimes she says, I might just do a commentary just myself about how Garcia is thinking and what Garcia is really feeling.
Well, I don't want to say that she's not as good an actor as she's implying, but I do follow her on Twitter and I can say that a lot of it has to do with the fact that she literally is Penelope Garcia.
Yeah.
Like, without, this is not a performance. This is who she is. It's not magic.
Without magic. Like,
yeah, exactly. The real Kirsten doesn't have magical powers, but everything else about the character is her.
Well, you assume that, you know, and she was talking about the fact that she was wearing bunny ears and she says, well, you know, she said this really wasn't a bunny ears episode, but she said, I put them on in the morning when I came to work, you know, and she said, I realized.
Yeah, oh, that's kind of hilarious, actually.
Oh, I mean, but it was funny, but I'm going, if you want to look for what's wrong in some ways for this show and why it's so freaking dangerous sometimes. Yeah.
The fact that she would blithely hear that somewhere on the internet and then go on a commentary and say, actually, this is all true. And I'm like, no, none of it is true.
Erica is the one that said it was true.
Oh my God.
It's Erica. Erica, the executive producer.
Thinks that, oh, wow.
That was enough, good enough research.
Yep.
No, what you do is the minute you see that, right?
You go to Snopes. That's what Snopes is for.
Oh my God, go double check that one out because everything is a conspiracy theory. But obviously people on Criminal Minds believe some of these conspiracy theories clearly. Because
it's a little
scary
to think about, yeah.
Yeah, but you don't even have to do more than a surface scratch to find out the reality. Like that's what I don't understand is that people just want to believe. And it goes to the discussion we had about how people believe what they see on television.
Yeah, and it's going to be very interesting when we actually talk about the conspiracy theory episode next year.
Yeah, well, we'll get there. Yeah, and hopefully there'll be some commentaries. I guess I'm going to...
Oh, God.
Maybe I'll...
Oh, we're definitely getting the DVDs of season 13. There's no question about that.
If the library's not open, I'll have to buy them, but...
Yeah, it's fine. They're all very reasonably priced.
Yeah, I don't know when the library is going to be open again.
Yeah, we're all hoping soon. But yeah, something interesting, though. So when I'm watching this episode, there's one thing I don't believe, right? And it kind of breaks the whole episode because the thing is, it doesn't have to break the episode, but they so wanted to, you know, take this side swipe at Mexico and say Mexico is all corrupt and horrible. And they go out and they say that if he gets thrown into a Mexican prison, he'll be killed immediately. And I'm like, really? Like, you know, I think there are Mexican prisons that are, like, just prisons. You know, I don't think thousands of people are getting murdered in Mexican prisons every week. And maybe, as a gringo, he will have a harder time. But it seems very crazy for them to immediately say he'll definitely die immediately if he gets sent to a Mexican prison.
I'm going. Reed's got enough money.
Yes, I know.
I mean, if El Chapo can set up his whole shtick, I am sure if Mexican prisons are as corrupt as Criminal Minds seems to think they are.
He can hire an American lawyer who can find him a Mexican fixer, and he can make life pretty comfortable for himself in prison with all of the money he's got sitting around. Yeah, you're right. He spends money. He spends no money. Like, he's worked like multiple jobs simultaneously. Because let's not forget, he's constantly writing and presenting papers in addition to his field work. So
And teaching classes.
And teaching classes. Yeah. He spends no money. So I'm pretty sure he's doing fine financially. And he could hire a fixer to get him better treatment in a Mexican prison. But no, they just want to do this drive-by about Mexican prisons, that they're all hell holes and he'll definitely die immediately if he gets sent.
I don't know. People should go to, like... But here's the problem, is nobody in the U.S., I don't know, do people in the U.S. not go anywhere else in Mexico? Like, I can still remember when we were driving, we drove home once from Mexico City through Guadalajara.
Okay.
We stopped, I think, in San Obispo, whatever. Anyway, okay. One of them, but going up through the middle, instead of going, you know, on the east end of Texas, along the coast, we decided to drive up the middle. And we stopped in a motel.
Right.
And this little motel in a little town. And she says, oh, and there are those pills, right, that you can put in your water. And I looked at her and I said, so do you drink your water? And she says, yeah, there's nothing wrong with it. She says, but tourists always want it. Right? Want these pills.
Yeah, the
right?
chlorine pills, yeah.
Yeah, you know. And I'm going, I said, we won't be using them. Because once, right, my husband had gone before he went down with a bunch of his friends to Mexico.
Right.
Before I met him.
Okay.
And he didn't take any of the pills.
Yeah.
Right? And he was the only one that didn't get sick. I mean, I ate stuff. I mean, even when I was pregnant, there were things I avoided when I was pregnant.
Right.
But I would have avoided that kind of stuff. But we bought stuff from street vendors in Mexico City.
Yeah.
We didn't have a problem. I never got sick. I got sunstroke.
That can happen literally anywhere.
Well, it's hot and I burned my arm. I still have the scar because I had my arm out the window while I was driving.
Yeah,
right?
And you forget
while
to take, driving. And you, for, I mean, and you're enjoying, and that's one thing that's happened to all of us, I think, who drive, you open the window, you put your arm out, and it's so cool from the breeze, you don't realize you're burning. Yeah.
Yeah. And,
that's happened to everybody.
You know, I mean, but, you know, I always wore a shirt then afterwards, but, you know, I mean, I'm sort of sitting there going,
no, but
yeah,
it's like,
Mexico.
And it's this casual xenophobia, right?
Yeah. It's
like,
just,
that bringing
they don't
in
even...
the assumption, they don't even realize that they're doing it. Like this assumption that there is something inherently wrong with every part of Mexico.
Well, it goes back to the Alamo, as I found out.
When
as I found out watching
year.
Those movies, three, you know, those movies about the Alamo. And I'm going, oh, my God, because I did a whole bunch of when I was taking history. Yeah. Right at U of O, I did a whole bunch of stuff on Mexico and the Mexican Revolution. Because we were doing a whole course on nationalism, right? And I did a whole bunch of stuff on different aspects of the Mexican, you know, I mean, give me a break.
Another thing I wanted to mention, though, was how they figure out who the victim is. It bothered me so much because they're like, they go through the thing you already talked about, which is the whole, maybe she had to keep her identity secret because she was, you know, afraid that those murder the pharmaceutical companies were going to murder her, right? Which, by the way, earlier in this season, that already happened once in the time that shocked me. There was the dead lady who is, you know, brutally murdered and stuffed in a oil bin filled with cement. And one of them is like, she worked at a bank. Maybe she was murdered to cover up what she knew about banking irregularities. Like, what are you people talking about?
They listen to InfoWars, obviously.
But it's like, it was so crazy. And it's like, I'm not saying that a bank could, I mean, I doubt that banks are having people killed. I'm not saying a bank couldn't have someone killed. I'm saying if a bank has someone killed, you know, to cover up the evil stuff a bank is doing, they sure as hell aren't killing them by having someone cut up their, like, drill into their brain and then dump them alive.
Oh, they're going to execute them and dump them in the river.
Exactly. Or the like sea. They got a sea right there. But anyway, it's the same thing here. So they believe we live in a world where corporations are on the regular just murdering people to cover things up. Is the world of Criminal Minds, apparently. Not that there's been ever evidence of that happening in Criminal Minds, just the characters think that's happening, because like you say, all the characters watch InfoWars. It's both a podcast and a radio show.
Yeah, well, so there's it's a
visual. Although it's not a visual,
it's
no longer right. On YouTube. Yeah, they kicked him off YouTube. Yeah, I mean, this is years ago. So he was still on YouTube. And thank God they kicked him off YouTube. Way to go, YouTube.
About time.
I know, right? Anyway, but the point I'm getting at is, so they're like, probably she's traveling incognito. But most people, when they travel incognito, use an anagram of their real names.
Who does that?
Who on earth would ever use an anagram of their real name?
No,
it's crazy,
hardly
right?
Anybody ever does that.
No one ever does that.
Sadie. N-A-D-I-E? Excuse me?
Her real name is Nadie.
Nadia, yes. But Nadie?
No, there's no way her real name is Nadie Ramos. There's just... No. Nope. people don't do this anyway. Like, it's not something that anyone would actually do ever in real life. But beyond that, it just doesn't make sense within the world of the episode.
And if Reed is going to the clinic in Houston, why wouldn't he know her real name?
Yeah, well, no. I'm sure he knows their real her real name. They just don't because it's just
But what I'm saying is that if he's going to write a name on his arm.
Oh, right. Why didn't he write her real name? Yeah. Why would he write the anagram? That's actually a really good point. Yeah,
that's the whole stupidity of this. He's already met with her three times.
This is the third time. So you're right. There's literally no reason. You're right, because he's got a perfect memory. So it's not like he'd have to write down the name. Because it's like, she'd say to him, I'm going to be at the motel under the name Rose Medina. But he wouldn't have to write that down. It's Reed. He's got a perfect memory. So he knows her name is... Nadie Ramos. And he would know that she's going under... And so if he wrote a name on his arm to remember something when he was drugged or whatever, he would obviously write the real name that he knows and uses all the time rather than the fake name that he just used in this, like, one instance.
Or the one motel. Because she would use her real name at the clinic.
Oh, absolutely.
She's going to use her real name in Mexico because... You know, that's where her parents are.
Are from. Exactly. And so she's only using the fake name for this one thing.
And excuse me, I'm not sure you need a visa to go back and forth between Mexico and the United States.
I don't think you
do. In 2014. Or no, 2017 even.
Yeah, I don't think you do. I mean, I can't say for sure. I don't know everything about
because of NAFTA.
Them. Right, because of NAFTA. I hadn't thought about that.
We don't need visas to go to the United States.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I'm going, she doesn't have a visa. Wait a minute, you know.
Under NAFTA rules, it's an open border to make it easier for people to work.
Yeah, and you need your passport to go across. Well, you didn't even need that until 9/11.
Yeah.
You didn't even need a passport. I mean, your driver's license was good enough to cross the border.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
I had a passport, but...
All right. But yes, so the Nadie Ramos thing, and here's the problem that is at the core of this episode, right? She has been bribed, threatened, whatever, we never find out, to get him into Mexico so this can be pulled on him. And the lie she tells him is that there are ingredients in her potion that she can only get in Mexico because they're illegal in America, right? And so that's why she has to get them. And here's the part I don't believe that kind of breaks the entire premise of this episode. And more importantly, the rest of the season. Okay. I don't believe that Spencer Reed, ridiculous, controlling, know-it-all Spencer Reed, wouldn't have a chemical analysis of the drugs done. Like, he just got given this vial to give to his mother, and there's no way this character, based on everything we know about him, doesn't immediately take that vial to a chemist and say, what is in this vial?
Yeah.
There's just no way.
Okay, well, you see, I don't even think that she had to be bribed. I think that this is just a drug with one or two ingredients, supposedly, she says she can only get in Mexico.
Yeah.
So he goes down to Mexico because it's a drug that's illegal in the United States, exactly, or whatever.
That's what he thinks. He goes, that's what he's told.
Okay, but he's going, he's met with this woman. I don't think that she is even part of Peter Lewis's thing.
She absolutely is. No, she absolutely is, because there's no reason for having, as we find out, there's nothing illegal in there.
Oh, yeah, so, that's right. But yeah. Assuming, yeah, okay, yeah, I see what you're saying. We find out there's nothing, so therefore they can't hold him for illegal. There's nothing even that is illegal in the United States.
Exactly.
So, but I'm going, I mean, maybe she was just making extra money on the side. You know, it's like the avocado cures, right?
Well, yeah, but I mean, whether or not it's a valid cure, the whole fiction that he had to come to Mexico to get it is something that, well, not Peter Lewis, because it's not actually Scratch doing any of this.
No, of course not.
But that's, you know, spoiler alert.
Yeah. But anyway,
spoiler alert, it's not
mind.
Actually.
We're working on the Peter Lewis thing.
Exactly.
But what I'm saying,
my point is, like, I don't understand. I mean, and it's not believable that the character Spencer Reed wouldn't have a chemical analysis of this thing done.
Yeah.
And find out.
And he could have it done anywhere.
In a second. It costs nothing. I mean, he's got plenty of money. He knows people who are professionals at this sort of thing. Like, there's no way he wouldn't have it done. And he wouldn't have found out that the stuff is harmless. I mean, you can debate whether or not it's effective, but we know for a fact it's not illegal.
Yeah, and but you see, I just assumed that, you know, I mean, if you were going to argue the Peter Lewis thing, you're going, okay, so he's been having Reed watched, and he knows he's going down there, and he just takes advantage of the situation.
But that's
right?
Not what happened, because we know she was in on it, because there was nothing illegal in the thing, and the whole part was a scam to get him into Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, every part of this was a scam to get him into Mexico. Also, I don't know why he's in, like, schlubby guy disguise.
Yeah.
Like, it's not illegal for you to go. No one's watching. Like, you don't think anyone's watching you, Reed. Why are you dressed in this weirdly schlubby disguise before going to Mexico?
Because they all think, because Kirsten and Erica thought it looked good.
Well, there you go.
Because you couldn't have, you know, you had to then be able to, well, why is he dressed like that? He would never dress like that.
That's why I thought he was undercover. Just like you would.
Yeah, I know, and he would never do drugs, and,
yeah,
you know, I mean, he's
at the end of his rope, and the thing is, if he had been down there doing drugs, I would understand him dressing like that, but he's not, he's just there to meet her and buy a thing, which again, they treat it like he's buying an illegal drug, but, I mean, even within her lie, the stuff's still legal in Mexico. Like, I don't know why he can't say, just meet me at a truck stop on the other side of the border. I'll give you money and give me the stuff. Like, why go through this whole, you have to come to this small, like, why is he accepting the fiction that he has to go to this small town?
Well, we can only assume that Reed is decompensating.
That's true. Yeah, he is crumbling because of his relationship with his mother. Yeah,
that too much of it is coming to the front with having his mother living with him.
Yeah.
He's being like his memories that he's pushed back, and his business of being in love with
suppressed memories and the abuse and the
abuse and everything else that we talked about last week.
It's all coming to the forefront,
and it's pushing at whatever barriers Reed has created in his brain to live the lie. And so he's decompensating.
Yeah.
How's that?
That's a makes better, sense. That that's using a better explanation than the show ever offers us.
Yeah, and it would explain, and like I would fully say, look, this guy is, what do you mean he's never going to fall off the wagon?
He's you're so fragile.
Your friends, well, yeah, you know the thing that really upset me about this episode?
Please.
Every time they talked about him, the boy wonder, the boy genius. Oh, the poor little boy.
He's my 36 years old.
I was just sitting there going, oh, God, help me.
Why are you still referring to him as if he's a child? The man is 36 years old.
He's not 8 years old.
He's not a prodigy anymore.
Yes, he's not Sheldon Cooper.
I know. He's not a, like, he was, there was a time when he was a prodigy. He's not a prodigy anymore. He's just a guy who refused to emotionally age.
Even Sheldon grew up.
Yeah, eventually.
Eventually, in the run of The Big Bang Theory.
Sheldon grew up more than Spencer Reed did.
Yeah, they allowed Sheldon to sort of.
And Sheldon's a sitcom villain, so the idea that this guy on a drama didn't age up mentally more is kind of shocking. All right. Well,
it's the conceit of the show to never have to grow up.
Absolutely.
And to lie about him all the time. They've all got this. Lying, they've all lied to themselves about who Reed is,
absolutely.
That they don't have to ever
step in and make a
that he is so
damaged. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And I mean, that's at the core of Meta Reed, is that there's this damaged guy with the emotions of a child, and he's on the team, and everybody covers for him all the time. And that's the tragedy of Reed, is that he needs someone to say no. And I mean, to in his defense, in season 15 he is in therapy
finally, because his mother, he's finally had to deal with the fact his mother's going to die,
and he's never going to have the relationship with her he wanted, and he actually gets into therapy, and thank heavens for it.
You know, and that he lied to himself about the relationship he had with his mother.
Yes.
As we see in this episode, when you have that scene between his mother and father.
Mm-hmm.
God. Anyway, yes.
But that's the scene that made me say to you, 100% she threatened to kill herself and Reed if he tried to take her.
Probably.
100%.
Yeah. I mean, I'm...
It's right there in that scene.
Getting to that one.
Like, there's no other explanation for why the father leaves him with her. Like, there's just no other reason.
Yeah.
And you believe it.
She would have done it.
She would have done it. She killed a man.
Yeah, she would have given Reed a sedative.
Yeah.
So that he would, too much sedative, so he would go to sleep and never wake up. And exactly. She would have killed herself the same way.
Absolutely. Yeah. So now, instead of our hypothesis about how Reed's mother would have murdered him if it came to that. This show got dark, huh? And just one last thing. It's funny, and I know that here's the thing that I also don't believe about the episode. So next episode, we're going to find out that, like, the FBI has completely abandoned him.
I don't believe that for a minute.
I don't believe that would ever happen. The FBI covers up for its people when they murder people. That's just what the FBI does. It's in their DNA. But more importantly than that, if the FBI was going to dump him, why did they extradite him back to America?
Yeah.
Because even if she's an American citizen, he's also in jail for the friggin', like, the 5 pounds of drugs in the trunk of his car.
Yeah.
That's the other reason he's in jail. So can't they just hold him for that, whether or not she's an American citizen?
But it wouldn't even matter. She's a Mexican citizen as well. Too.
I know. No, I mean, and that's the thing.
None
it's like,
of it makes sense. I mean,
well,
it's
no, but I mean, we have to assume that the Secretary of State was pulling some heavy strings to get him extradited as a favor, right?
Yeah.
And so the problem becomes, if they're willing to go to all that trouble to have him extradited as a favor, like, but why are they doing that when they were just going to dump him the minute he got to the other side of the border? It just doesn't make sense, right?
Well, yes, but if if you don't do that, then you don't have the problems that come up in the next few episodes.
Okay, you're right. All right, so, although, I mean, no, actually, yeah, you're right. I'm trying to think. No, I guess you wouldn't. All right, so let's get to it. Next
collision
episode.
Collision course. Excuse me.
Yep. Synopsize away.
Okay, an inappropriate use of juggle is coming up again.
Of course it is.
When Bradenton, Florida drivers and pedestrians are critically injured in a series of car accidents, the BAU suspects the accidents are engineered or were engineered by a hacker.
Oh, scandalous.
Whoa.
Meanwhile,
let me go. There's some more. We haven't hit juggle yet. Meanwhile, Prentice and defense attorney Fiona Duncan juggle preventing Reed from being indicted and sorting through a mountain of incriminating evidence.
Yeah, it's bad, all right. So anyway, let's get to it.
Where do you want to start?
It's the dumbest episode. Like, there's no defense for how dumb this episode is. All right, so let's just get to it. So first off, it's weird that, like, nobody tries, like, of the people who have their cars controlled. And if their cars just got controlled right as they were about to hit an intersection, it would be one thing, right? But instead, these people are getting their cars controlled and then, like, turning down that road so the guy can watch the accident. And it raises the question to me, it's like, I know that you're freaked out. I would be freaked out if my car suddenly started accelerating and someone got in charge of the wheel. That would freak me out. I would be very frightened. Okay? But, and this is the key part, at some point, you've got the handbrake right there. Like, how long does it take you to try that handbrake? Or, here's another thing, just turn off the car. You can turn off the car. These are not cars that are all so new that they just have completely electronic starting systems and push buttons and it's all handled by a computer. These cars still have keys. Keys that you could just turn off. And there's no reason not to give that at least a try. But it gets worse because you're watching the episode, right? And so he runs the first two people over on the same street. And so we have to assume, and this is where it gets a little confusing, because you try to think of the mathematics of him being able to, hack into cars at the exact time that someone was crossing the street at that intersection. But more importantly, you've got all these people, like, his killing is only possible because no one in the world of criminal minds apparently looks both ways before crossing the street.
Do you not look before you cross the street?
Like, is that not something that's taught in American schools anymore? Because I had that drilled into me.
Yeah, I know. Because
you got all these people just blithely walking out to the street and getting hit by a speeding car 1 second later. I'm like, you could have looked and see that there was a speeding car racing towards you.
What? Do you mean that you believe in Bradenton, Florida, that when you've got a crosswalk, that all cars are going to stop the crosswalk, and therefore
you live in Florida.
Nuts!
You have to know that cars might run stop signs, and the cars that were racing towards them, we see the speed at which they hit them, and we see that it happens 1 second after they stepped out into the road, which means that car had to be racing along at 50 miles an hour towards that intersection.
I just sat there. Yeah, so nobody looks both ways before you cross the street. That's what you drill into your children if you've got any brains.
Oh, no, absolutely. 100%. And so then you get this crazy idea later on, right? So then we get the guy who, like, weaves through traffic and hits the lady at the crosswalk. And then you get this bonkers moment, right, where they have the character say, so obviously he didn't just want to hit anyone. He wanted to hit an attractive brown-haired lady. And they're like, this is definitely because he was, you know, offended in some way by an attractive brown-haired lady. To which I would respond, how can you conceivably know that she was attractive? And I'll tell you why. He is racing that car at 50 miles an hour down a street at night, weaving through traffic.
Yeah.
And he was doing it all through streaming video through a traffic, like a dashboard camera. Okay. You can't see any details of anybody's faces. Like, the thing is, all we know, and the thing is, they keep saying attractive over and over again. All you know is, you can say he wanted to hit a dark-haired woman. That's all you can say. Because at the speed he was going and the time it took him to make the decision to hit her, he would have less than half of one second to decide to run her over. And during that half of a 1 second, she sure as hell didn't turn to look at him. So no, you can't say...
No, because they don't look when they're crossing the street.
And the thing is, especially in that scene, the amount of weaving through oncoming traffic he was doing, you have to imagine everyone on the street is honking and swearing at him. Yeah, so how could this woman have not heard that there's some ruckus going on?
If you notice, when you listen to that, nobody is honking and swearing at him.
I know, but I mean, it's not believable.
It's not believable. Like, I'm sitting there going, what, you know, why are the people
in the cars that are hijacked not blasting their horns? I'm going to tell you a true story, okay? So I'm on the street. I'm driving down the street. The street I'm on has a slight incline. That's important to the story. That's point one. Point two, there is an ice storm happening. Okay, so up ahead of me, I'm only going 30 kilometers an hour. To you Americans, that's 18, 19 miles an hour. So very slowly. But that's still enough that would flatten and kill someone if it hit them, because this is a car. So 100 feet up ahead of me, someone presses one of the crosswalk buttons, one of those ones with a crosswalk. You know, it's not a four-way stop. It's not a red light. Yeah. You just press the light and you start walking. I see someone, it is 100 feet ahead of me, I'm in a slight downwards incline, and I'm like, oh, someone wants to cross. So I gently apply the brakes, and my car just starts sliding, because I am on pure ice. And that is, and I have a half a second of being shocked and terrified. But do you know what I do then? I jam on the horn, because that's what the horn's there for. And by jamming on the horn, the people who were starting to cross in front of me say, oh, why is that guy jamming on a horn? They look across and they see, oh, look, there's a guy coming towards me. And they immediately step back onto the sidewalk. And I slide open my window and I say, sorry, it's pure ice. I yell that at them as I'm going by. And that's my point. Even if you can't control your car, even if for some reason you can't turn it off, why is your hand not immediately going to that horn to warn everybody ahead of you that you can't control
that
the car?
That there's something wrong.
Yeah. Exactly.
What if he's also in control
of the horn?
That's right. In Criminal Minds worlds, this hacker controls the horn.
As if...
Not that anybody tried to use it.
Okay? No, but that's the point. They're not even trying to use the horn.
You know, not that they tried to use it.
But no, even in these frigging modern cars, horns are still a 100% mechanical device because they have to be for safety purposes. You can't have the electrical system of your car go out and have your horn not work because that would be a massive... That would be like your electrical system could go wrong and your seatbelt would stop working. No, there are safety features that are safety features that can't be computer controlled that have to be manually operable. The horn is one of them. The seatbelt is one of them. It's crazy, this episode. Because then we get to the most bonkers one at all. We get to the woman that he's actually trying to kill. And we have to believe that he managed to time this car kidnapping to when the woman was unloading groceries from her SUV. Like, how? How could you possibly know that she would be standing next to the back of her SUV unloading groceries? And you would be able to murder her with a out-of-control car. There's no way to time that.
Yeah, magic.
Magic. Well, and the worst part is...
Evil magic. Evil black magic.
The car in which he is driving is so, like, that he steals that time is so old, it literally has a tape deck. It doesn't even have a CD player. It has a tape deck. Yet somehow he can control that car too. A car from the early 1990s. How is he taking over that car?
Didn't have much in the way of computers that worked well. And you couldn't control your car. It was still pretty mechanical.
Of course, no, it was 100% mechanical.
Can I ask you, the minute you've got these cars and they know it's a hacker, why don't they tell people? Again, why haven't you had a media? Well, JJ doesn't do media.
I know. Why are they not telling? By the way, there's a guy hijacking cars and using it to murder people. So if you feel someone take control of your car, this is what you should do. Immediately turn off the engine. Start leaning on the horn to warn. Like, there's steps you should be taking, but they're not even telling anybody. And then, oh my God, then of course they find him because he has signed all of his crimes by turning the radio station, which again, the guy has a tape deck that is not connected to anything because it's a tape deck. But somehow he's managed to take control of that as well. And so they turn it all to the same radio station. And so they just look at, oh, hey, do any crazy murderers work at that radio station? Well, yeah, there was a guy who was just fired there for threatening people's lives. Oh, okay. And he had a connection to two of the people who got murdered? Yep. All right. Well, that's your guy. And he even drives a car with the radio station's call letters on it. This episode.
This is why season 12 is just like rot gut episode year.
It's really bad because, and this is the problem they get into, right? Every episode, like, these are not the best structured and best timed out episodes at the best of times. But now, every single episode, they've got to spend 15 minutes of the episode hanging out with Reed in his low-budget version of the show, Oz. Which, by the way, they even got Harold Perrineau to be on it.
I know! I was just going...
How weird is it that there's like, we want to do a tribute to Oz. Can we get Harold Perrineau to be on it? Well, apparently you can. He's not going to be in a wheelchair or anything, but there he is.
He is. I know. I was very nice to see.
No, I love Harold Perrineau and I love Oz. Yeah. It doesn't hold up if you think about it, anything that happens on the show for a second, but it's one hell of a ride when you're watching it.
Yeah, well, you remember Oz. We couldn't stop.
I can't stop watching it.
And you can't wait till the next season starts.
Absolutely. No, it is one of the most addictive TV shows you will ever watch. You're desperate for the new season every time. Like, and this is before Sopranos. Like, this is before the golden age of television. Like, Oz and The Wire, not The Wire, Oz and Homicide, because they did The Wire after Oz.
Yeah.
But Oz and Homicide were, like, the first of this age of show, like, of prestige television.
Yeah,
this type of prestige television.
Yeah. Oz was just...
Oh, the amazing show.
Oh, my God.
It's why we... And I mean, if you people haven't watched Oz, that's where we know... That's why we know who J.K. Simmons is, okay? You know beloved actor J.K. Simmons from Everything Who Everyone Loves? Yeah, he's from Oz.
Yeah.
And he was incredible on Oz. This is the episode where they find out he's going to get thrown
Stringer
in jail.
Bell.
Oh, Stringer Bell. Well, that's what Stringer Bell is why we have, oh God, why am I blanking his name? Unbelievably famous British actor. Oh, this is bad.
Idris.
Idris Elba. Thank you. Yes. That's why we have Stringer Bell.
Idris, who got
the Stringer Bell. That's how he got super famous. Like, there are some people from these early shows. That was The Wire, not Oz, but yes.
Yeah.
He's fantastic on that, but it's like we got all of these wonderful actors who are then in everything who do these breakout performances, and the breakout performance from Oz was J.K. Simmons's Schilling as Vern Schillinger, who would go on to blow us all away for decades to come, for now bordering on 25 years to come, all because he played a Nazi on Oz. But this is the episode where we find out that they find the knife and he's gonna go to jail right? And we get the insane idea that I honestly, and this is where the show, I know it has to happen this way to for the season to work, but by the end of the season, for the back nine to work, right? It has to happen this way. But I'm going to say,
Erica keeps telling us,
need to tell us that later on in the episode, you need to tell us that judge was bribed to not give him bail.
Yeah.
Because I don't believe for a second they don't give this kid bail. He's an FBI, he is a decorated FBI agent. And just because he trapped, and they're like, and they act like traveling to Mexico is such a severe sin.
Oh, God.
That he can't be trusted now because he committed a crime in Mexico.
Oh, heavens.
And they even say the craziest thing. It was like, he would have no trouble getting a fake ID and fleeing the country. I'm like, yes, he would. It's not a simple thing to get a fake ID and flee America. That's not easy to do.
Well, and it's
And they're like, as an FBI agent, he has contacts all over the world. To which I would say, what do you think FBI agents do all day?
No. If he was a CIA agent.
Oh, yeah. No, if he was a CIA agent, yes. You might be able to make that assumption. But it's like, they full on have her say, well, he's an FBI agent. Obviously, he knows criminals all over the world who can help him disappear. And I'm like, the man never leaves America for the most part.
But he goes to Washington and Houston. Las Vegas and
Las Vegas. And that's it. That's his whole life is two cities, except when he's working.
For what he, and the FBI, BAU, only spends time
in America.
In America. The FBI cannot go overseas.
Operate outside of American borders. You know, they cannot work beyond borders.
No, that's exactly.
A little reference to that show.
Yeah.
And we talk all the time about that.
I still do not know who greenlighted that show. I am so
excited to get into how bad the second season must get. So yeah, the fact that they act like traveling to Mexico is some sort of cardinal sin that he cannot be forgiven for is just crazy to me. And they're like, no, you have to be thrown in jail. I'm like, you could at least, like, they let out Paul Manafort. You know, yeah. Paul Manafort, a man who... And this is, like, literally spent the 20 years before he committed crimes in America traveling, like, working for foreign dictators in Russia, in former Russian states, who has literally huge amounts of money and is used to traveling on private planes that don't go through customs control. And they let that man out on bail. You can't tell me that they're going to not give bail to this man-child who's looking after his aged mother.
Yeah, you know.
There's no way. But anyway, but that's an easy fix, because at the end of the season, you have to say, no, they bribed or threatened that judge.
Yeah,
and then you have
all.
To show that judge getting arrested at the end of the episode. That's literally all you have to do.
Well, they don't
this.
Do that, but, you know.
No, they can't be bothered to make it make sense.
Besides, you have to indoctrinate the American public. Into being afraid of Mexicans, so
no.
I am
no, but yeah,
going...
it's like, and it's no, you're absolutely right, because the statement of the show is that, like, being tarred with the brush of having been in Mexico is enough to make the judge not trust him.
That's ridiculous,
and it's insane. But
Donald Trump had not yet gotten rid of all of the good judges in the United States.
Oh, damn.
He hadn't
All right.
fired.
Well,
and
no,
that wouldn't have been a judge that he would have fired anyway.
Although, honestly, maybe the subtext here is that it's like, this was a judge who was, now that Donald Trump has been elected president, this judge was auditioning for a role on the Supreme Court. By being super anti-FBI and super anti-Mexico. That's not a bad narrative we can throw on this.
Oh, yeah, you can throw that narrative in and believe it.
Like, she's like, ooh, well, I know that Trump has just become president and there's this illegally held open Supreme Court seat. You know, maybe I can just be super publicly racist and anti-FBI and he'll put me on the Supreme Court.
You never know.
I know that's not what the episode meant, but now in my head, that is what the episode meant.
That could work just as well as her being threatened or bribed.
Yeah, no, it would. Yeah, showing off for Trump and being a bad judge
February 22nd, 2017.
So he's already president in the world of this show. All right. So let's move on to the third episode, which is where the trial stuff really starts.
When four Philadelphia civilians are disfigured in planned attacks, the BAU sets out to catch a budding serial killer who wants to make his victims feel as ugly as he does.
All right.
Meanwhile, and this time the meanwhile is correct.
Yeah.
Reed is sent to the general general population by a guard with a grudge and makes a friend in former federal agent Calvin Shaw.
Yeah. Harold Perrineau just doing his Perrineau thing and really upping the quality of every scene he's in. Isn't he great?
Yeah, he's so good.
He's so good. Yeah. Dear Reed, maybe don't dismiss the white supremacist so easily.
I do not know Reed. Well, Reed is...
Here's the thing.
No, Reed lives in La La Land.
That's true. I hate Nazis, okay? I hate Nazis as much as all right-thinking people hate Nazis. But if I were thrown in an American federal penitentiary tomorrow, and I knew that a bunch of people were going to murder me, there was a good chance I might be murdered because of the color of my skin as some kind of a power play inside the prison. You know what? There's a good chance I'd be like, hey, Nazis, do you need me to do something for you guys?
And when they come up to talk,
ask me for a favor, I'd be like, I'll move drugs for you. That's fine.
Yeah, you know, I'm in jail for moving drugs, even though nobody says it.
Yeah, I know, right?
Reed is going to go, I'm innocent. Well, and no, I'm not going to do this. And I'm just like, no. I mean, that's like Beecher, right?
Exactly. Who wants to live in this world where he can just, like, be in prison and not have to try and take part in any of the mini society that has built itself inside of Oz. And well, look how well that goes for Beecher.
Yeah.
It's an amazing journey and we're recommending that show. But anyway, so yeah, it's like, maybe don't dismiss the white supremacists so easily there, Reed. They just want to look out for people with the same skin color. And you might've gotten into a little less trouble had you just gone along with them right at the start. I know, and just so angrily dismisses the idea of working with white supremacists. I'm like, yeah, we all hate white supremacists, but this is prison.
You have been put in Gen Pop.
Exactly. You're not in protective custody.
For a reason.
I don't know why he isn't in. And again, the one guard who's being bribed. Right? There's no way this one guard who's being bribed has the authority to keep him in Gen Pop. There's just no way.
Why doesn't he immediately call his lawyer?
Why is his lawyer not dealing with this?
And it was never brought up by his lawyer this entire episode. And I'm going, excuse me, he's in Gen Pop? Why isn't the lawyer down there banging on the windows?
And by the way, this is something where, and it's going to play into, right? It's going to play into my theory that I reveal of how to fix Reed as a character in this whole season that I'm going to reveal in the final episode of the season. I know I've been playing this up for like 2 years now, but trust me, it's going to be worth it when I get... No, I can't stop because it's relevant.
Yes.
It's relevant to what I'm about to say, which is that if I think, and it goes into my theory that I'll explain, but I can say enough of this now. I think Reed wants to be punished.
Yeah.
I think on some level he doesn't, like, he's surprised to be in Gen Pop, but in the same way, because right at the start of the episode, he tries to not accept help from the team. He tries to turn down the lawyer until Emily just says, don't be an idiot. Obviously you need a lawyer.
Yeah.
He tries to turn down the lawyer.
Oh no. Look, we have always said that Reed is
passively suicidal.
Passively suicidal.
And that's what I'm saying with the Gen Pop thing. Like, you and I can agree his lawyer should be knocking down heaven and earth. But I think on some level, and you can back me on this or not, Reed wants to be in Gen Pop and wants to someone to take the killing him. I mean, and you can loop that into why he doesn't work with the, what do you call it? White supremacists is, he's like, if some, you know what, fundamentally, on some level, he has to be thinking, if someone would just stab me to death in a shower, then I'm not responsible for it.
Yep. As I said, passive
Yeah, he's passively suicidal. He is absolutely. And the fact that he tries to turn down the lawyer and then immediately pisses off people in the thing and doesn't beg to be taken. Like, as you say, after he says to the one guard, I'm supposed to be in Gen Pop. He never brings it up again. Sorry, I'm supposed to be in protective custody. He never brings it up again because he is at least passively suicidal.
Yeah. And that continues on as we see. I mean, the rest of the season just forces that. And why all of these people who are his family don't profile him
as being this kind of passively suicidal. I know.
Yeah. This is the one big mystery and the one thing that makes a lie of everything in this show.
Yeah.
They can't
see. What an unbelievable mess Spencer Reed is. All right, so now let's briefly, since we've talked all about Spencer Reed for another 20 minutes, let's just briefly talk about the plot of this episode, which is a massively dishonest episode, because it's almost impossible to actually do an episode about incels, and I'll tell you why. Incels all do mass shootings.
Do what?
Mass shootings.
Oh,
that's
yes.
What they do. They drive around and they shoot as many people as possible, and generally they'll go to a place where they can find a bunch of women. And they'll just shoot as many women as they can. Sometimes they don't do mass shooting. Sometimes they will take a van and they will just drive it down the street trying to hit women. Right? But generally they do mass shootings because it's not hard to get a gun in America. And they like, this episode wants him to do the acid splashing thing. But it's just, that's not what incels do. Incels are mass shooters. That's just who they are. It is at the core of their personality. They want to kill as many women as possible, as quickly as possible. That's why I always joke when people talk about, well, misandrian hating men is a real problem, isn't it? To which I always respond, once a woman gets an assault rifle and goes to a gym full of men and shoots 30 men because she hates men so much, and then that happens a dozen more times, you can tell me that misandry is a problem. Because if you want to go to the internet and Google man shooting up a gym to kill women, you are going to find an endless number of that happening. That's just something that happens a lot. Because these men hate women, so they go to where a lot of women are, where a lot of women are vulnerable, and they shoot all of them. That's why, like, so many mass shooters are motivated by hatred of women, and they all do it in the same basic way. And it's funny, because they talk about Elliot Rodger, but Elliot Rodger was, of course, so bad at crime that he actually killed more men than women, because he started his rampage by stabbing all of his roommates.
Yeah.
And then he got his gun, and he went to go shoot as many women as he could, but he wasn't a good shot, and the cops caught him almost immediately. So yeah, it's funny, but he wanted to be a mass shooter. He wanted to go around shooting like 50 women before he killed himself. But the cops caught him almost immediately after he'd shot like one woman. So he's like, in addition to everything else, he was just a complete failure of a human being. Just a complete scumbag in every way, but he also wasn't good at it, which is, you know, nice. So yeah, it's very dishonest to say that incels would do anything but be mass shooters. Because it suggests that there is a less harmful version of being an incel, which there's just not. It's a horrible, toxic, monstrous philosophy. And I just wanted to remind everybody that you should hate and feel disgust towards them. And yes, no, obviously they deserve help. I'm not crazy, but you know what? They're responsible for a lot of violence in the world. Also, by the way, they have frigging co-opted the language of The Matrix, a movie by two trans women that exists to talk about how bad the patriarchy is. And I think that's what pisses me off the most. It's like, these two trans women made the ultimate story of fighting the patriarchy, and the frigging patriarchy co-opted the imagery of Red Pill.
But
it's so that's frustrating.
That is what the patriarchy
does. I know.
This is what the patriarchy does, and it co-opts women into the patriarchy. You see it in academia. You know, just go back and take a look at the 70s. You know, take a look at the 80s. And
no, you're right.
And take a look at what basically happened to the movement, and you can go back and look at the earlier movement. Yes, we always make some strides.
Yeah.
But there's a co-optation, and I mean, the patriarchy itself is just a social system that is so powerful.
Yeah.
Because it's based on gender,
and I just want to point out that it's like The Matrix, a movie where all of the villains are white men in suits, and all of the heroes are people who go to raves. This isn't a complicated. There's not a lot of subtext here. It's pretty much just text.
I still can't remember. Where was that? Remember the wedding in the rave, the electronic club in Ottawa?
What are you talking about?
Upstairs. Okay. You went to the wedding, too.
No, I did not go to that wedding, but I do remember it. Yeah.
Well, Redman went, and Harry
went. I didn't. But the point is, I do remember that incident, yes.
But I'm going, I was standing up, right?
Yeah.
And it was in, I'm trying to remember what the bar was.
It might have been the Lookout, but the point is.
No, I was just, never mind.
It's not really relevant to the story we're telling.
No.
But the point is, in the episode, he's splashing, let's just get back to the plot for a second. So he's splashing acid in people's faces because he's a scumbag. And then, and this is where it gets kind of interesting, as usual, the team literally, all they have is, we know the kind of person he is, and we know that they don't like X, Y, or Z, but they don't really have any idea who it could be or how to catch him, until, and this is just what happens in the episode, he throws acid in the face of his former best friend's girlfriend.
Yeah.
And so they go and they talk to the former best friend, and they're like, is anyone pissed at you because you ditched the incel community and got a girlfriend? And they're like, yeah, this one guy is a real creep. And that's the guy. And by the way, the takedown of him is one of the weirdest things in the show. And I'll tell you why. Because he's in a bar and he wants to spray acid on the faces of everyone in a bar in a singles night. And literally, like, he doesn't have a bomb. He doesn't have a bomb. He doesn't have, like, some way or a dead man switch or anything. And they act like they've got to go up to him and talk to him about his feelings and blah, 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 blah. You know, you can just shove this guy's face into, like, there's five of you. You can just shove his face into the bar and immobilize both of his arms, and he's no longer a threat. You don't have, like, he doesn't know the FBI is looking for him. Even if he does, he doesn't know what you look like. But they act like they've got Steven has to walk up to him and talk to him and talk about how, like, we understand your emotions and blah, blah, blah. No,
blah,
like, just,
blah, blah.
Who cares?
Was just blah, blah, blah. Who cares and who wants to talk about it?
Yeah, like, who cares about this guy's feelings? Who cares about this guy's emotions? Just frigging smash his head into the bar, right?
Don't even put handcuffs on him.
No, that's what you do. You smash their heads against the bar, down into the bar, and then you put handcuffs on them. And this would be over in 3 seconds, but they act like they've got to negotiate. They act like it's the Swinger episode, and Emily's got to come up to the guy. Again, that was another alpha male themed episode, and talk him into being distracted.
Yeah.
Right? And it's like, no, you don't have to do any of that. You can just arrest him. It's not complicated. You're making this 80% harder than it has to be, people. So yeah, that bothered me about the episode.
Oh, it was just, and I watched them all today because you changed the day, right? So I had to watch them all this morning.
I know.
Listen to the commentary.
I know. I really did screw you over on that one.
Yeah, no.
Because I had the time to watch these over a more languorous period. Because
you already knew you were going to do it today. Exactly. I got up this morning to an email.
Found out. I know.
Oh,
it's terrible.
Today, not tomorrow. But anyway, that made me very like this one was just.
Well, no, and this is.
Can't they do something?
I know.
Better?
What bothered me about this episode too, right, is it really made me focus on how wrong done by the show. Because, I mean, I had always talked about how Steven, I don't know why he's there, blah, 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 blah. Like, what reason does he have? And I realized watching this episode that, like, because he only shows up to be an extra character when Reed gets thrown in jail, we're in this extra bind where the show has a bad time developing characters normally. Right? Yeah. But it's like, how could Steven possibly get any development when in addition to doing, like, they've got to do the entire murder mystery every week in 30 minutes.
And then they're spending all their time with Reed.
Exactly. They have cut out 15 minutes per episode just to hang out with Reed. So, I mean, in a regular season where he was just a new character, Steven is going to struggle for airtime. Right? Struggle for any chance to be developed as a character. But you add into that that they have to do a mystery in 15 minutes less time than usual. That guarantees that Steven is going to have zero airtime. And I kind of feel sorry for the guy. Like, the first time I watched it, I didn't understand why the character was there. The second time I'm watching it, I actively feel sorry for this actor, who was guaranteed that he was going to have no chance to make an impact.
Okay, but it's the Rachel Nichols problem.
Yeah.
Exactly the same problem, that you never give the character a chance to develop.
Well, the difference, of course, the difference is, and I'm like, the difference is that Rachel Nichols had even less, two things. A, Rachel Nichols should have had more of a chance, right? Because she was actually brought in to replace someone, whereas Steven is just an extra additional character.
Yeah.
Right? So there theoretically should have been time for Rachel Nichols, and Steven is actually worse done by, because not only is he an extra character that they didn't need, Rachel Nichols, for better or for worse, they didn't spend a huge amount of time with Emily until, like, until those three episodes. Whereas here, a full half of the season where Steven should be having time to introduce himself, right?
And develop a character,
15 to 20 minutes of every episode is being devoted to Reed, so there's no room for him to breathe.
Yeah.
Like, and that's the weird part. Rachel Nichols, they actively ruined their chance to do anything interesting with that character, whereas Steven never had a chance. Because there just simply wasn't room to do the storytelling. Because with the Emily stuff, that's only four episodes. Here it's a whole half season that is just devoted to Reed.
And you can't figure out what the rationale was for putting an extra character in.
Yeah. If you knew you were going to be spending all this time on Reed, why did you even put an extra character in? You know, you've already got Aisha Tyler having nothing to do or say.
Right. Yeah, and you replaced Hodge with Emily.
You replaced Hodge. It's not like Steven's coming in to replace Hodge. You replaced him with Emily, as badly as that went. That was the theory anyway. So it's like, what are you doing here, guys?
No, I mean, they could have brought Steve in to run the team, and that could have created a very interesting year. The
dynamic, yeah. If they have a new team leader in there.
Yeah.
That could have been interesting, but no, they wanted to give it to Emily, so.
No.
As unbelievable as that is, the most unbelievable thing to happen on the show until she gets offered the role of director of the FBI.
I know, but we've already discussed that.
That's a few years away here on the show, so we'll go with that. But yeah.
We discussed that already when we watched the show in real time.
Exactly. Exactly. People can go listen to our season 15 stuff if they want to hear us talk about that. it's pretty questionable. It's fundamentally the only, like, I was very unimpressed with the incel storyline, right? It's not interesting and it's not realistic.
It's not good. It's not realistic.
It's not well handled.
It's surface. It's just
surface nonsense.
Yeah, yeah, surface nonsense. And it was just like, oh, Lord.
Come on.
And I can't even play my Mystery Manor while I'm watching this.
Oh.
I can sort of turn it up and do dishes, but I can't. Nice. I mean, if I could just, you know, I can listen to the news and play Mystery Manor if I want to, but I can't.
But not the show.
Not the show, because you do have to watch it.
You know? Oh, no, absolutely. Absolutely, so, you have to watch it. But anyway, as I was saying, it's funny because it's just the only good thing we can say about this episode is it introduces Harold Perrineau, and we genuinely love Harold Perrineau.
Yes.
We'll talk more about his role on the show as the season continues, but I'm always happy to see Harold Perrineau. It was great when he showed up because they're doing Airsats Oz, but then they get the Star of Oz to be in it. It's so great. Like, it's one of the rare things where, like, the casting person absolutely knocked it right out of the park, and I'm really happy Harold Perrineau was willing to do it. So, thumbs up for that part, at least. All right, so I guess that's this week.
Oh, yes.
Would you like to tell people what we're doing next week?
Okay, next week, we're going to have to watch Assistance is Futile.
Which one is that?
Tatum.
Funny name, though.
yeah.
Which one is Assistance is Futile?
Three women, New York City women, are tortured to death and found with their bones crushed.
Oh, yeah. The vampire throws people off of buildings. Yeah. Go.
Tatum O'Neill, right?
Yeah.
In the Dark.
Okay.
When two radically different killing sprees take place in Burlington, Vermont.
Okay. The best example yet for, I feel like a dog would have solved this in 5 minutes.
Okay. Meanwhile, Alves, we don't even know who Alves is, presents Shaw with an ultimate after Reed is assaulted.
Okay.
I would assume Alves is the prison guard?
No, it's Luke. Luke Alves.
Oh, Luke Alves. Okay, yeah. Alves. I forgot what Luke's last name was.
Yeah, that's totally normal.
And then the third one is called Hell's Kitchen.
Which one is Hell's Kitchen?
BAU returns to New York to identify a killer with an unquenchable thirst after a 16-year-old girl.
Werewolf. Well, no, 16-year-old girl?
16-year-old girl disappears from the Hell's Kitchen neighborhood, and the investigation is connected to two cold cases.
No, that's the vampire. Oh, I'm sorry. There's the sewer vampire. I forgot that the guy who breaks legs and the sewer vampire are different people. My bad. That's my bad. They're different episodes. I got confused because they're right next to each other in the show. Sorry about that, everybody.
There's one in between them. They're in New York twice.
New York twice in 3 episodes. That's actually very strange for the show. They normally don't, like, go back that quickly to locations. But that's not a criticism. It's just an observation.
Yes.
Okay.
We'll talk about that later on.
We'll talk about that one later. All right. So join us back here next week for that. I hope you survived. I was about to say join us Tuesday for... No, Beyond Borders is long over. I hope you survived Beyond Borders if you were listening along. We barely did. If you were listening along, you would know that.
Yeah.
So we'll see you back here next week for those episodes. If you have any questions for us, if you have any comments, if you have any profiling-related fiction you'd like to recommend us to watch, we would love to hear from you. Please drop us a line at profilingcriminalminds@gmail.com. Beyond that, if you're listening to this on any kind of a podcast client, please rate and review the podcast because that's what helps people find it. We'll see you back here next Thursday for more Criminal Minds. But until then, I'm going to say that's right. Au revoir.
And have a good weekend.
Profiling Criminal Minds is a member of the Kinks Podcasting Network.